Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Dr. Robert Brake of Ocean Park, Washington, and a frequent contributor to this program, has reminded me that today, May 25th, 2017, marks the 230th anniversary of the first day of the Constitutional Convention of 1787. It ended on September 17th, 1787, 114 days later, which Dr. Brake suggests comparison to Donald Trump's first 114 days as the latest president, an office ordained by that convention. This upcoming weekend is the 149th Memorial Day commemoration, which is also traditionally the advent of the annual summer silly season. Memorial Day was first established in 1868 as a single day of national mourning for its war dead, with a powerful element of jingoism inherent, inspired by the Civil War in which virtually everyone killed on either side or caught between was an American. The questions of just or unjust wars are momentarily transcended by annual recognition of their grim costs. So I would like to read something that I wrote. I call it Flowers for All. And I begin with a couple of quotes. The whole trouble comes from treating your enemies like human beings. If you do that, they cease to be enemies. Think what that leads to. It's the end of patriotism. It's the end of war. It's the end of everything. And that was from the 1937 movie Fire Over England. And from a World War II inscription at Japan's Yasukuni Shrine. Welcome home, young soldier. You were ours, and they took you away. You are no more. Suns may set and rise, but you must sleep on during one unending night. Flowers for all. At the end of May, the United States gets sentimental about its citizens who died in its wars. Graves of American war dead, who are buried all over the world, are smeared with flowers and tears. Hundreds of thousands more remain unfound and unburied and have provided nutrients for war-blasted soil or meals for undersea life. The dead are not remembered as the terrible cost of the wars that killed them. They are instead used to recruit fresher crops for planting underground. Memorial Day has from its beginning, just after the Civil War, been a rallying cry for war, however unusual it might seem for the specter of death to be a successful recruiter. The war dead are praised by the country's leaders who extol their lifeless co-conspirators to sound the war cry for more wars and suggest to newer generations that only such acts of sacrifice justify the lives of able citizenry. Families and friends lay flowers on the graves, and though they grieve, they seldom question the rightness of the loss. Arguments for war are as stale as the bones beneath the flowers, yet every modest gesture toward peace is buried underneath official contempt and scorned by a war mentality that, like weapons technology, is vividly self-perpetuating. Harsh religious and nationalist military values are imposed upon our society, which seems indifferent to its ideals of freedom and equality. War and the worship of wealth and power are substituted for human rights. Our most cherished values are perverted to serve as war cries to commit horror, and we choose leaders who offer us nightmares disguised as dream worlds. The only purpose for the existence of armies, despite claims of righteousness and deceptions of pageantry, is the destruction of human beings. Soldiering is big business, the first order of every empire as it has been since ancient times. Soldiers in every generation sent out to die and to kill by every culture and society. But soldiers themselves are little more than expendable pawns, readily discarded, seldom retrieved. Pions of glory, duty, and patriotism are perhaps a greater treachery than the hoax of original sin. Yet each generation seems to think it should not be outdone by its predecessors. It must leave its bloody mark on history, no matter how absurd or pointless. Every generation has been incapable or unwilling to arrest the pattern of terror and suffering each inflicts upon itself, and our own risks world holocaust because of the compulsive insistence that our era, which is only noteworthy because we live in it, be no less dramatic than the histories we imitate. Once more, we believe we are on the periphery of massive war, and we feel as helpless as the generations that awaited the two world wars. Much emphasis upon heroic sacrifice is the usual official piety of Memorial Day, showy pageants of mourning to justify shaky premises of questionable wars, and more ominously, the callous disregard for large tolls of innocent citizens killed by the honored dead. Americans might wish to take stock of what they are being led into before steadily increasing numbers of coffins of American dead regularly arrive for interment in the homeland from protracted wars. Because the nation seems to be in perpetual war, and also for the fact we are able to kill half a world away from any conflict by robot aerial drones, we should alter our concept of memorial observance to include those whom we have killed rather than solely our own war dead. We should be especially disturbed by remote control murder, the cyber-robotic warfare of killing human targets half a world away by the use of predator drones operated from military installations safely far beyond reprisal or retribution. It is no joke that wedding parties in the Middle East have been heavily targeted in erroneous assumption they are gatherings of terrorists, and that thousands of bystanders who are killed or maimed in drone strikes are dismissed as collateral casualties. The insidious use of military predator drones by android controlled by distant computer technicians linked with military satellites to strike at targets in the Middle East, which have been responsible for thousands of non-combatant deaths and injuries, can and should be considered as war crimes. Air Force veterans who have participated in the Predator drone program are speaking out against it, in particular about innocent victims killed and injured by drone strikes. They are demonized as traitors and cowards, identical slanders shrieked at members of Vietnam veterans against the war half a century ago, and more recently at veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who rebelled against those wars. Memorial Day has meant commemorating America's war dead, essentially combatants in wars from the Civil War to the present. But the nation's past wars were much different from the current world stage perpetual war fought with robot drones and missiles, as well as with military SWAT team soldiers. The majority of targets have been non-combatant civilians whose only offense is to be where they are. Our government seems to justify and accept spurious claims of collateral casualties, the deaths of civilians, so as to obviate any responsibility for war criminality, which adds greater iniquity to only honor our dead and not include those whom we have killed so regularly and dishonorably. Standing over the graves of America's war dead, it might be appropriately reverential to also think of those whose deaths they caused. And that was Flowers for All, which I wrote, and now again, something I wrote, Body Bag Patrol, and I begin with a quote from former First Lady Barbara Bush, who was also mother of President George W. Bush, and she made this comment just before the Iraq War in 2003. Why should we hear about body bags and deaths? It's not relevant. So why should I waste my beautiful mind on something like that? I was just minding my own business trying to kill people, Kamajui laughed with visions of a woman running into a street screaming. Then a grenade this guy was carrying exploded on his belt, and that was the end of the war for both of us. A car screeched to a halt and swerved past the woman, who was kneeling and crying, almost hitting her. They told me later his insides looked like they'd been scooped out with a spoon, Kamajui said, remembering he ran to the woman crying in the street. The Marine Corps killed my son, she screamed. It was a very hot day in Long Beach, California, and Kamajui was sitting in a sun-roasted car across from a dock at the U.S. Navy shipyard, talking to a friend from the Vietnam War. His big gray ship was waiting to heave anchor and go back to war, or somewhere. He was a U.S. Marine sweating out a final year before discharge back to the world. Kamajui, or something similar, seems to mean clown on the island of Okinawa, where everyone he knew called him that the year he had been stationed there, and he hoped he might be again, rather than down south, as Vietnam was called on Okinawa. It took a long time to sew his hide back together. The faulty grenade went off south of Da Nang, where a green river wraps itself into a bow, which Americans called the horseshoe. Marines died there all the time. I don't remember much about those months in the hospital, except most of the time I felt like I was going to die, Kamajui said, then laughed. He laughed at everything most of the time. A real clown. Anyhow, I got out of there finally and shipped back here to play ghoul. For a year, he drove USMC officers to the homes of Marines killed in action. One time we told this woman her kid was dead. She went hysterical, ripped up the captain's shirt and tore off his medals. Then she got around to me and almost stripped me naked. She ran outside and threw herself on the lawn screaming, then got up and ran into the street. She was kneeling, Japanese style, face in her hands, screaming, when a car almost got her. He was her only son. Kamajui said at the funeral, when an officer handed the woman a folded U.S. flag, which is the custom, she threw it in his face. A lot of people took it hard, Kamajui said. She was the worst I saw, but most of them broke down and cried. And I remember a few guys shouted at us to get the hell out of their homes. One woman asked Kamajui why couldn't he have been killed instead of her son. They know what you're there for, right when you get out of the car and start walking toward the door, Kamajui said. There's no other reason a Marine in uniform would come to that door. He's sure not selling Bibles or calendars. By the time Kamajui and whatever officer was stuck with the task, told the parents, their son would already have been dead close to a week. Another 2 or 3 weeks would pass before the body reached the States. They're pretty ripe by then, and every funeral I went to was a closed casket, Kamajui said. I don't know if a family has the option of an opened or closed casket or even gets to see the body, but it would be a pretty disgusting sight, not just because the guy might be all chewed up from whatever he got hit with, but for the fact he's been dead for so long. Kamajui said he went to about 20 funerals. Almost every one was a big joke. When we pulled the caskets out of the hearse, we all smiled and snickered, saying, "Dumb fool, idiot, that's what you get, baby." There's nothing sentimental about it. He laughed. After the funerals, the VFW used to invite us down to their hall, and we'd get drunk and tell animal jokes about the poor guy we just planted. He said some of the fun revolved around a singing telegram one of the Marines made up and gave Kamajui to deliver to a family. I was supposed to go up to the front door and sing, "Your son is dead, shot in the head." Everybody got a kick out of that, though we never did it. There was also the chance of mix-ups, more so than anybody ever knew about, Kamajui said. "You know how those body packers are. They don't care," he said, meaning the enlisted men responsible for stuffing the KIAs into plastic bags with the right name tags. "Most of the time, the brass just takes some grunt, infantryman, and makes him a body packer. They stuff cotton in all the holes, tag the stiff, and ship him out." He reminded his friend of the olive green, which we called odious drab, body cases that used to line the dusty road to the Chulai airstrip after a slaughter. Sometimes they stretched a few miles, generally 4 to a steel CONUS box, militarese for continental U.S., zipped up in plastic bags, refrigerated against Vietnam sweltering, moist heat. Helicopters and transport planes would eventually get around to taking the corpses, a few at a time, up to Da Nang, from there to various places where the painters practiced their arts upon bodies not too badly mangled, then to the States, where USMC guards transported them across the country on trains or planes. Last stop, home and a hole at the nearest local cemetery. "What used to crack me up," Kamajui said, "was this stone the casket would be placed on in a hole. It had a Marine Corps emblem, all polished and painted. It's like they're trying to recruit somebody the same time they're burying somebody else." When Kamajui was in USMC boot camp, he said the drill instructor made the recruits kneel and pray for war every night. After the doctors patched his pieces back together, Kamajui went home on leave and locked himself in his room for almost the entire 30 days. One night he woke up screaming, and his father found him crying in a cold sweat. People question you like a machine when you get back, he said. They want to get all excited and hear about all the blood and how many people you killed. Kamajui laughed. We're just democratic mercenaries, saving up all that combat pay for a new car. Navy petty officers and Marine sergeants and corporals started running around, shooing sailors and Marines to the ship. It was ready to get underway. Kamajui and his friend left the car. I don't know why they just don't take a guy's body and throw it in a garbage can, Kamajui said just before boarding. It's just been wasted anyhow. He don't know why he died. His parents don't know. He just goes to Vietnam hoping he don't come back in a body bag. And that was Body Bag Patrol, which I wrote for the North Long Beach Herald American in 1969. And now, War is Still a Racket, by Charles Sullivan. Again, I begin with a quote by USMC General Smedley Butler. Our whole history shows we have never fought a defensive war. It is well documented that all governments lie. It is also well known that they lie more when it comes to war. A government that proposes to carry out war that will not end in our lifetimes lies incessantly, and we must stop giving it our allegiance. We must refuse to give it our children. Let us evict the military recruiters from our schools and the nation's shopping malls. Without fodder, the cannons of militarism and empire cannot function. Our soldiers have nothing to gain by going to war and everything to lose. War is a rich man's device that, if truth were known, ignores the will of the people who have no say in it. Modern wars have no heroes, but they inevitably produce atrocities and countless innocent victims. There can be no moral justification for civilized people of any nationality taking up arms against one another, unless one nation is directly assaulted by another. War is the tool of barbarians and tyrants, and they are provoked by cowards hiding in safe places. The underlying reasons of war are always cloaked in darkness and secrecy. Otherwise, no sane person would fight them, and we would be forced to live in relative accord. However, our plutocratic rulers believe that war is more profitable than peace. Defense contractors cannot make billions by waging peace. Besides, what U.S. president would boast of being the peacetime president? There is no bravado in peace. Armed to the teeth, the American hero, as exemplified by and glorified in Hollywood, are invariably men of extreme violence. While those who initiate war persistently cloak their intentions in the language of patriotism, wars always have economic and ideological causes. In America, the causes of war have their origin in corporate plutocracy. Here, war is initiated at the behest of a corporation or a group of corporations doing business in a foreign country. The usual cause is that a foreign government has imposed some kind of restriction upon one of these corporations. In the most virulent cases, these countries will not allow their natural capital to be plundered by corporate marauders or privatized and exported. Some countries even insist upon public ownership of their raw materials, which makes them, obviously, the greatest menace to peace. Nations that have not adopted capitalism as a religion traditionally refuse to allow their resources or their people to be exploited for profit. These nations nationalize their assets, and rather than invading or occupying other nations, they provide free health care, unlimited education, and other programs of social and spiritual uplift to their citizens. These are the dangers of socialism and communism that we are indoctrinated against since birth, as the greatest scourge of evil the world has ever known. This is what they teach us in school, and it is ingrained in our psyche to the grave. Using the tax base for the public good to create a prosperous peacetime economy for all is, of course, positively un-American and anti-capitalist. It is a dangerous ideology that must not be allowed to spread, lest it result in eruptions of democracy, prolonged outbursts of peace, and the equitable distribution of goods and wealth. If allowed to flourish, socialism would mean the abolition of plutocracy and the end of socio-economic divisions, and it would result in the emancipation of the working class. The plutocrats know in their hearts of stone that the people lack the intelligence and wisdom to self-govern. They know that we require leaders who are our moral and intellectual superiors, who can teach us the value of free markets, fair trade, private ownership, insatiable greed, and the value of conquest. Thank God we have them to look after us and to grind us into hamburger for consumption by the global elite. In a nutshell, that is what war is all about as it pertains to the American experiment. There are no noble causes to fight and die for. War is about private ownership of everything and everyone. The commodification of nature and people, subjugated to rule by a corrupt global economic elite. War is a result of humankind's oldest and worst nemesis, greed and the lust for power over the lives of others. War is comprised of roughly equal parts racism, fervent nationalism, herd mentality, religion, propaganda, and lies, and the private ownership of materials and labor. War is the result of humankind's oldest and worst attributes, bought and paid for in blood. As terrible as war is, perhaps it exacts its greatest toll on the combatants themselves, the soldiers. Acting in the purported belief that they are spreading light into the darkness of the world, they are, in fact, doing exactly the opposite. They are stamping out the light of understanding, rationality, and hope. The soldier thus become the horrible thing they are vainly trying to destroy. All of this is possible because they have blindly followed men without hearts and conscience, men devoid of souls, who have misled them into the burning depths of a hell from which there is no way out. This is the sad reality we witness wherever our armed forces are stationed, carrying out the sociopathic agenda of global domination and empire. Those whose minds are not truly their own are susceptible to control by the psychopaths who would use them, just as soldiers have traditionally been the pawns of kings and emperors through the ages. The lies espoused by our so-called leaders do not matter on the battlefield. They do not matter when the bodies come home in oversized cardboard boxes, hauled by forklifts to airport curbs, and deposited at the feet of grief-stricken families like a commodity. In a sense, that is what they are. This is war's assembly line, where the bodies are packaged and sent home like a parcel, with the flag as a corporate logo printed on a box with the stamp, "Made in America," where lives are converted into cash for the global elite, a gift from the plutocracy. General Smedley Butler was right when he said in 1933 that war is a racket. It still is and always will be. War is the ultimate betrayal of human potential. And that was War is Still a Racket by Charles Sullivan, who is a photographer, social activist, and freelance writer residing in the hinterland of West Virginia. He wrote this for Op-Ed News. And this is the third time Marine Corps General Smedley Darlington Butler has been mentioned on this program in less than a year, the first being when he was a whistleblower about a projected assassination of Franklin Roosevelt, the second by Robert Brake, who profiled Butler's famous but too often neglected book, War is a Racket. Marines learn about General Butler in USMC boot camp that he was twice a Medal of Honor winner. But the Marine Corps guidebook, the average Marine's primary source of USMC history, does not mention that he had fiercely turned against war and authored War is a Racket. But then most Americans are probably unaware that another USMC Medal of Honor winner and former commandant of the Marine Corps was publicly against the Vietnam War. His name was David M. Shoup, and his Medal of Honor was from Tarawa in World War II. General Shoup was an outspoken public herald who announced an anti-war demonstration by Vietnam veterans against the war in the spring of 1971 that took place in Washington, D.C., in front of the Capitol building. The vets hurled their war medals back at Congress. In regard to the inscription at Japan's Yasukuni Shrine, the kamikaze pilots of World War II thought they were sacrificing their lives to save 1,000 years of their history and the way of life of those they loved and revered. Even though by then they might have been disgusted by their warlords who caused the war, those doomed young men felt they had no other choice because the war gave them no other choice. They felt their suicidal deaths were a necessary last desperate attempt to save their country, which was absolutely true courage. In closing, I would like to say that I seriously object to the manner in which we in the USA commemorate Memorial Day, and for that matter, the equally empty celebration of Labor Day. Each seems little more than a bookend holiday weekend beginning and ending the silly season. I think Memorial Day should return to a single day, May 30th, as it was traditionally. And if we are to honor Memorial Day, we should do it for real, The same with Labor Day, or abolish both in acknowledgement they have been commercially trivialized. Memorial Day is hypocrisy if we venerate only our own dead and not the deaths of innocents considered collateral or are sanctioned by Donald Trump's call for extermination of alleged radical Islamist families, specifically children who are the next generation. And as this is the advent of the silly season, it might be appropriate to consider that its high point will most likely be the solar eclipse on August 21st. Depot Bay claims to be at the core of the corona, and its tourist bureau alleges that 500,000 persons will flock to the mid-Oregon coast to view the eclipse. That presents the possible catastrophe that might very well eclipse the Mount St. Helens eruption this program commemorated last week, if the predicted Cascadia earthquake and tsunami takes that ill-opportune moment to shake, rattle, and drown the Oregon coast. This has been Michael McCusker. Happy Memorial Day.